Although ever background to this psalm, there's been a shift in the politics of the nation. With the end of the football season, I found myself watching a history program this week. That doesn't happen every week. It was about King Henry the VII. I had heard very little about him, so listened intently. King Henry the VII, the father of King Henry the VIII, was quite a ruler. He knew how to steer the country. But he also knew how to hold the country in absolute fear. It was a rod of iron that he ruled with. And the historian who was presenting the programme talked about one particular incident. King Henry the VII had a plan that his first son, Arthur, would succeed him. Arthur sadly died soon after his marriage, which meant that King Henry, or the man who had become King Henry the VIII, was the next in line. And they were at a sporting event, and Henry the VIII mixed and mingled with the people in a very relaxed manner, in complete contrast to his father. And there was a shift on that day. And from that day, people waited and longed for Henry the VIII to be king, and no longer wanted Henry the VII to be king. End of history lesson. A similar shift has happened in the life of King Saul. Everybody sees it. The crowd sees it. It's not Saul they want now, it's David. So when they come back from battle, there's this song. Saul has slain his thousands, David his tens of thousands, favoured by the people. But it's not just the people, it's the king's son, Jonathan, who is heir to the throne. He sees it. And just after David has slain Goliath, Jonathan literally puts his armour, Jonathan's armour, onto David, as if to say, the right to the throne is going to him, not me. And there are these wonderful terms of warmth and affection that bind Jonathan and David together. He sees it, that this one is going to be king. And it's not just the crowd, it's not just Jonathan. Saul sees it too. Saul has this troubling spirit from the Lord that comes to him from time to time. And ironically, it's David who is used to soothe Saul with his harp playing at that time. But Saul sees two things in David. He sees that God is with him and that David is wise. Saul then is afraid, we're told, in 1 Samuel, afraid of David. And so on two particular occasions, he tries to remove the cause of fear. He doesn't bow to God. He tries to get David out of the way. He throws a spear at this competitor. David is quick, and on both occasions escapes out of the way. And despite Jonathan's best efforts to repair the damage and to find out from his father, Saul, what he's going to do, he says to David, you have to go now, you have to flee. And David flees, and he flees to the cave. That's the background to this psalm. Now eventually people join him. Eventually people find out where he is and they come to him, and it's a real rough and tough collection of dropouts and losers, men and women that you don't want in your army or with you when you're in trouble, but they come and he gathers essentially a small nation that gathers around him. But before they come, David has plenty of time to think, plenty of time to reflect. One man writing on this psalm talks about Psalm 142, which is written in the same situation. He says Psalm 142 is rough around the edges. It's an outburst on the first day. Psalm 57 is meticulously planned. It's wonderfully structured. And he suggests that Psalm 57 is written about the same time, but it's written a few days afterwards, where David's collected his thoughts and he's been able to organise the structure into a more systematic way. That be the case. We see here a man on the run, alone in a cave, promised to be king, recognised by the people, by the heir to the throne, and by the present king, to be the man who will succeed that king. But he feels very much far from a throne and a palace right now. The reality is, if Saul could get his hands on him, David would be dead. So it's not just a spear he's got to avoid, it's Saul's people. And so he turns to the only refuge he knows, his God. Here we see David, and this is hard, isn't it, Christian? We're called to live by faith and not by sight. That's not the easiest thing to do sometimes, is it? But here David sees things that his eyes just cannot see. He's in a cave, but he sees, verse 1, wings. He's in darkness, but at the end of the psalm, he can't wait to get up in the morning and sing. Just turn over the page and look at verse 7. My heart is steadfast, oh my God, my heart is steadfast. I will sing and give praise. Awake my glory, that is, awake all of me. Awake lute and harp. Somehow he's going to, in his mind and heart, imagine an orchestra. I will awake in the dawn. I'm going to get up tomorrow and I'm going to sing. Now, I don't know about you, but I want to know how a man does that. How does a man in that situation come to a conclusion like that? He goes on a journey from prayer to praise. I've got 2 points, two lessons for us tonight. The first one is this. I want you to notice God's design. God's design. There is access to God through dependency. There is access to God through dependency. Just notice the first two lines of the psalm. Be merciful to me, O God, be merciful to me, for my soul trusts in you. Now let me tell you what that's not, first of all. That's not David saying, I'm trusting in you. I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine. It's not the attitude of a child who's got to do 3 chores for pocket money and they decide to do 4 chores in the hope they'll get an extra 50p. That's not the attitude. What is here is the complete opposite of pride-filled independency, the very thing that Saul lived out. What is here is complete emptiness in and of himself. Be merciful to me, O God. Be merciful to me, for my soul trusts in you. There's no one else I can turn to. There's nothing else I have other than you. God's design is that there's access to him through dependency. David's not alone in Scripture, is he? We see Job in great need, being received by God. We see Jacob in broken exhaustion at striving against God and others, embraced by God. We see Moses, as the children were taught this week, Moses and God's people in times of crisis, embraced by God when they came to him. God's design is access to him through dependency. The verse continues, in the shadow of your wings I will make my refuge until these calamities have passed by. His mind, I suggest, is going to the Ark of the Covenant. Two cherubims sat, wings outspread on this golden layered wooden box. And under those wings, the blood of the sacrifice would be sprinkled. There was refuge under the wings. Sin was dealt with under the wings. There's a shelter from sin. But David knows that there's another set of wings. Not the wings of cherubims, but the wings of his God. And under those wings, the shelter for life. In the shadow of your wings, I will make my refuge until these calamities have passed by. God's design is his access to him through dependency. David had done very well. David is now a champion of war. He's now a master musician. He's now the son-in-law of the king, for what that meant to the king. He's a favoured friend of the prince, Jonathan. He was well known by all, respected by all. David had done well. But he doesn't claim any of those at all, does he? As reasons for merit to God. He just comes. Be merciful to me, O God. Be merciful to me. Two men prayed in the temple. One thanked God that he was not like the other man. One thanked God that he was such and such. He did such and such. There was no request at all on that man's lips. And the second man hardly entered. Head dropped. God, be merciful to me, a sinner. Which of these two men went away justified? Asked Jesus. The crowd had no problem answering. Well, the man who asked for the mercy of God. See, God has designed a way of access to him through dependency, hasn't he? Blessed are those. So blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. God has designed a way of access to him through dependency. One man pleaded with Jesus, "Heal my servant." Jesus was about to go to the house. You don't need to go, just say the word. And Jesus is impressed. Not with his position. Not with his wisdom. But with his faith. Access to God through dependency. This man knew that Jesus could do it. That's all David had at this point. How easy it is to take, Christian, the position of self-appreciation in how we get on with God. How easy it is to be almost self-congratulating in how we do. Are you pleased? Are you pleased that you are regular as you spend time with God? It is good that you are regular, but I'm asking about what's going on in the heart. Are you pleased? Is it an appointment that you're keeping, and you're keeping track of your appointments? There is no merit in being starving. There is no merit in coming to God empty-handed. There is no merit in coming to God with confession and utter, utter dependence. So don't dare pat yourself on the back that you are doing well. What we need is a God who satisfies us completely. And he satisfies us completely when we come to him hungry. There's no merit or virtue when we come like that. There's just empty hands. God has designed a way to him through dependency. The reason why this is tricky for us, as we come to him collectively like this, or we come to him privately in our homes, the reason why it's tricky is because grace is just so unique, so wonderful, that either we revert to how we were before we converted, or we revert to the thoughts, the selfish thoughts that easily arise. But look, Be merciful to me, O God, be merciful to me, for my soul trusts in you. In the shadow of your wings I will make my refuge until these calamities have passed by. And look at the confidence it gives. I'll cry out to God Most High, to God who performs all things for me, or who fulfills his purpose for me. And the way these verses work is, I will cry out to God, verse 2, and he shall send from heaven and save me, verse 3. As I cry out, he will send. Now, just be aware that the story of David follows hurdle after hurdle, tough time after tough time. It doesn't go super smooth from here on in. But he is confident that his God is sending as he cries out. He is confident as he comes to God for mercy. His God is answering that prayer. Even to the point of reproaching the one who would swallow me up. God shall send forth his mercy and his truth. We're a week away from a church week of prayer. Sunday, next Sunday, God willing, sees the start of our week of prayer and the Grace Baptist Mission week of prayer. We'll link those two together. How should we come? We've had something like 13 new members in the last year. We've been able to run a holiday club again. If you look back over the church's calendar, there are many things to be pleased with. How should we come in the week of prayer? Have mercy, O God. Have mercy. That's how we should come. We'll come and pray for our missionaries. Gifted men and women sent to all different parts of the world. Supported financially, generally speaking well. How should we come? Have mercy, O God. Have mercy. God's design is that he's provided a way of access to him through dependency. We don't have to conjure up enemies to lay before God our need. We just have to come. We don't have to analyze culture and society. We just have to come. I would plead with you, as you pray to the Lord by yourself, with others, corporately. Guard your heart, Christian. Guard your heart that you come, not like the Pharisee who stood up and prayed, I thank you, I'm not like him. We would do well to, in spirit, follow David's example. Be merciful to me, O God. Be merciful to me, for my soul trusts in you. Beware self-appreciation, self-congratulation, even self-satisfaction. These things stink. Absolutely stink. What God is pleased with, the man and woman, the church, the people who come to him in utter need. Can we do that? Yes, we can. God's design, a way of access to him through dependency. And then God's children's desire. God's children's desire. The Lord above all. You see in verse 4, my soul is among lions. Literally, as he puts his head down in the cave, outside, there are lions. I lie among the sons of men. Now, there's nobody there present at that point, but they're set on fire. Would you like to lie beside someone who's on fire? Whose teeth are spears and arrows, and their tongue a sharp-edged sword. They can get me from far away, like an arrow or a spear. And literally he fled a spear. or they can get me from close by, like a sword. I'm a danger from a distance or closeness. This man's in danger. But look what he says next. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be above all the earth. Where on earth did that come from? What a contrast. In the first few weeks of university in Preston, I signed up for a number of organisations, one of which was the Parachuting Club. I thought, if I don't do it now, I'll never do it. So a few weeks later, I think they did it a few weeks later in case anybody chickened out. A few weeks later, we went away for the weekend. And we signed up, me and this fellow who I got to know over the process. We signed up for 3 jumps. The daftest thing I've ever done in my life. But having done 3 jumps, and it was it'd been a lovely day. Having done 3 jumps, we were on the ground, safe and sound. And we were quite pleased with ourselves. We thought we were quite brave. We thought we had done well. Now, when you're learning to parachute, it's dead easy. All you have to do is jump. Okay? Now, you might say, I'm not being flippant. There is a wire that's attached to your parachute that's also attached to the plane. You literally just have to fall and the chute will open. You don't have to touch the chute except to control it to guide you down, and that's quite easy. So we were feeling very self-satisfied in falling from an aeroplane. They did tell us in training about the reserve chute. That sits here. That's when we got a bit nervous. But you see, this is the end of the weekend. We were standing on the ground. We hadn't had to use our reserve chute, and we thought we were something. We were watching others who belonged to the club who were based on the site, and they were jumping out. They were jumping out from real heights, 10,000 feet and so on. And as we watched, one of the men got in trouble with his chute. And there's a quick release function on the chute. He released this parachute, and you could see it drift away for hundreds and hundreds of yards. And us rookies stood, jaws hit the floor. What's he going to do? Lots of people were trying to identify who it was. Is it someone from the university who's jumping his second or third jump? It wasn't. It was, I'm going to put my foot in it. It was an old man, 70 years old, okay? He had jumped more times than you and I had hot dinners. So they recognised him from quite high up. And all the people in the club just started to walk away, as if it's not an issue. And we were standing, waiting. So he opened up his reserve chute, which is much smaller and harder to control. When he landed, he just landed 2 feet and just walked away. We'd spent the whole weekend practicing, landing and rolling, so we didn't break our legs. He just landed, just walked away. Now, when David is in the cave, it's not an old man who lands two-footed into his cave, but it is an old truth that lands two-footed and walks straight into David's mind. And for us, when we watch that man land and walk through that airstrip, although nothing changed, everything was different. All the perspective we had on ourselves of being great achievers that weekend shriveled up as this man in his 70s landed in a way we could never do. Nothing was different, but everything changed. And when this old truth lands in David's mind, nothing is different, but everything changes. What's the truth? It's expressed in verse 5. It's expressed in verse 11. The exact same words. David, while he's articulating the nature of his enemies in verse 4, he suddenly explodes in recognition of God, and he prays that God would be God. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be above all the earth. Now there's the truth. Where did it come from? God's Spirit communicating to this man in dire need. He's asked for mercy. Be merciful to me, O God. Be merciful to me. And here's part of the answer. Verse 5 enters into his head. My God is a great God. I have a great enemy. Dangerous. But I have a greater God. And then what he does in the rest of the psalm is he tracks back on his trails. He follows the same topics of thought, but in a slightly different light. So in verse 4, he thought about his enemies. But now after verse 5, he goes on to verse 6, he thinks about his enemies now. They've prepared a net for my steps. My soul is bowed down. They have dug a pit before me. Into the midst of it, they themselves will have fallen. So there's this confidence. Now he sees that his God is greater, and he's praying that God would be God, exalted above all things, that even his enemies, as dangerous as they are, he acknowledges that they have fallen. He talked in verse 2, I will cry out to God Most High. There's this dependence being expressed. But now in verse 7, it's I will sing. There's a rejoicing. Do you see that? This verse 5 has changed things. It's changed his attitude to his enemies. It's changed his attitude to how he communicates with his God. It's not crying out now. It's praising. It's singing out to his God. And while he's alone, while he's in the cave, he waits, looks forward to the day where he'll be able to praise you, O Lord, among the peoples. Sing to you among the nations. One of Israel's role was to communicate to other nations about how good their God is. David can't wait for that day when he is king, stands and communicates to the nations how great his God is. Verse 10, for your mercy reaches onto the heavens, your truth onto the clouds. You know that children's chorus, Jesus' love is very wonderful. So high you can't get over it, so low, so wide. David's stuck on one dimension. He just can't get over how high. For your mercy reaches onto the heavens, your truth onto the clouds. He's exploring the dimension of, I just can't get over how great his God is. Why is this important? Well, just like this truth landed in David's mind and walked straight in and transformed his day, you and I, Christian, no matter how much we've held on to the ability of God and the greatness of God to see us through each and every day, you need to be reminded, don't you? Because there are times when you do look at the waves more than the Saviour who walks on top. You do look at the cave and the roar of the lions and the enemies who'll pursue. You do look at those things more than you look at the greatness of your God. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be above the earth. We've been praying today. I'm praying often for the state of the nation as you consider this marriage bill. I suggest you we can take David's words. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be above all the earth. David was pursued by men who didn't want to know God and his ways. He's being chased down by those who were godless. We don't have to pray against people. We can pray for our God, that his position would be made known, that not just our nation, but the nations would see him as exalted above all of them. Here's a great view of God in a time of pressure. I encourage you this week to take these words. Let your glory be above all the earth. There are men and women who don't want to know you, Lord. but you are great. And if it can transform David's night or thoughts in those first nights in the cave, surely it can transform our thoughts as we think about our nation. It's not just a national level. As a church, we've been looking at what we've called personal corporate evangelism. Whether you come under that umbrella or not, it doesn't matter. The idea that we desire opportunity and contact with people, that we may be able to speak with them, show them the love of God and the relevance of Jesus Christ to their life. Well, David was bursting with anticipation for that, wasn't he? Verse 9, I'll praise you, O Lord, among the peoples. Why? Because he wanted his God to be exalted above the heavens, for his glory to be above all the earth. I challenge you, encourage you, as you seek to witness, whether it's corporately through holiday club, weekly activities, monthly activities in the church, whether it's just quietly in the workplace, sometimes very slowly, very quietly at home. What do you desire? Do you desire that people would acknowledge that you're clever, you're smart, you're right? Do you desire that people acknowledge that actually the thing that they slated you for is good? Or do you desire that your God be exalted above all the earth? Because that's the great cry of the believer. That people will see and know that he is great. Sometimes our motives can get twisted, can't we? We want to say the right thing or deliver a crunching comment that will flatten questions or unbelief. God's able to do that without your critical help. Be deeply satisfied in seeking that God would be above the heavens, exalted, that he would be acknowledged to be above all the earth. God's design, there's access through dependency. And if we're honest with God and honest with ourselves, that's actually quite easy to do, but we need to be reminded to do it. Come to God in dependency. It's God's design. And it's God's people's desire. That no matter what circumstances we face, corporately, individually, no matter what we face, that we would desire our Lord above all to be recognized by our nation, by our loved ones, by ourselves. Hinge in verse 5 changed everything. I suggest those words, those truths, that thought will transform your prayers, will give you hope and comfort in tough and challenging days, as well as keep your motives pure before your God. What happened in history is written in Scripture. God did, in his mercy and truth, deliver David. And David, like you and me, was not perfect, but remained steadfast, receiving the rebuke of the Lord when necessary, because he knew what it was to say and to remain saying, "Be merciful to me, O God. Be merciful to me, for my soul trusts in you. I present to you a God worthy of all trust in all circumstances." What more could you want?